Well, it's an absolutely glorious morning in Salford in Greater Manchester. Good morning to you. It's approaching 11 o'clock. It is November 10th, 2019, otherwise known as Remembrance Sunday. Hope you're having a good weekend. You're in fine form this morning or this evening, depending on where you are. This is Sunday View, looking at the front pages of the UK's Sunday newspapers and some of the stories inside, and we'll be dropping in on the mid-morning talk shows in the UK as well. As usual, always good to be with you. You can tweet the programme right now. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. I look forward to hearing from you this morning. So get tweeting, get tweeting.
Well, wing out the gimp.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yeah, I am the host. I am the host with the most. Not really, not this morning. Right, let's get rid of the music because there's a lot to get through this morning. I'm hoping to fit it all into an hour. That is the brief. Get it into an hour, yeah. Having a lovely weekend, lovely evening last night with friends, Maggie and John in Salford. Lovely to get out and to be catered for. Lovely evening. I know Maggie and John are probably listening, so good morning and thanks for a fantastic evening. And it was lovely to meet Sean and Ryan as well, John's sons. And Ryan serenaded us with his guitar, playing a bit of John Denver, Kenny Rogers, and a bit of Bruce Springsteen. An evening couldn't have been any more perfect, to be honest. Lovely stuff. Great. And I'm in good form accordingly. I'm in good form. So thanks to Maggie, John, and Sean, and Ryan for having us. Do you know, the papers are full of election stuff this morning. And it's my understanding that you're already pissed the bejesus off with election coverage. So I'll just give you loads more of it. How about that? Well, I won't give you bland election coverage, but it's in the Sunday newspapers, of course, and it will be until December 12th, which is the day we go to the polls. I get asked all the time, will you be voting, Richie? Who will you be voting for? No is the answer. Of course, I won't be voting. There you are. Make of it what you will. The Observer, front page, fury as decision on police probe into PM shelved until after poll. They've lost their wit. Headline writers are not what they used to be. Furious decision on police probe into PM shelved until after poll. Basically, the police watchdog is delaying a decision. So it's delaying a decision on whether or not to investigate Boris Johnson. You've known about this story for some time now. It's alleged that he conducted himself in an improper manner when he was the Mayor of London. It's alleged that the businesswoman Jennifer Arcoury got some favourable treatment because of her friendship with Boris Johnson when he was Mayor of London. But the Independent Office for Police Conduct is not too sure on whether or not it's going to investigate him full stop, and if they do, they will make that decision after the general election. So his enemies and Labour Party supporters are not too pleased. They want him investigated now. The Mail on Sunday, and this is the big story today on the front of the Mail on Sunday. It's the one that's received most coverage on UK media today. £1.2 trillion. That'll cost every UK household £43,000. What does it mean? £1.2 trillion. What does it mean? Well, it's an allegation by the Conservative Party that Labour's policies will cost the United Kingdom £1.2 trillion over the next 5 years. This is a Conservative dossier which has come out and said we will be bankrupted by the Labour Party if they seize power in a few weeks' time. Because over the next 5 years, which is the parliamentary term, should be, but we're having the third general election in the last 5 years, aren't we? In 4 years, actually. Yes, because we had a GM. We had a GE, a general election in 2015. We had one in 2017 and we're having one now. So if Labour governs for 5 years, apparently their spending will result in 1.2 trillion and it'll bankrupt us, apparently. It's on all the papers. The Sunday Times goes with £1 trillion Labour splurge to bankrupt the UK. Now, it must be said, the Mail on Sunday, the Sunday Times and the Sunday Telegraph are supporting the Conservative Party. So they would say this. Is there any truth in it? We'll hear in a minute, so we will. So that's in the Sunday Times. The Sunday Telegraph, their headline is, Scale of Labour's Reckless Spending Revealed. Same again, right? Telegraph, Times, Mail. The document, the dossier, comes as part of a Conservative Party effort to portray themselves as the fiscally sensible party and Labour as the reckless borrowers. A lot of talk about the note left in the Treasury back in 2010. Remember that old story when David Cameron formed a government with the Liberal Democrats in 2010? When they took power, there was a note left in the Treasury office basically saying there's no money left because of Gordon Brown and Tony Blair's years of borrowing. Yeah, so what's going on? What is going on? Well, let's hear from a couple of people. Labour will bankrupt us all, says the Tories, even though Labour hasn't published their manifesto yet. The Tory business minister, Kwasi Kwarteng, was on Sky this morning with Sophie Ridge, and she put it to him, is this just Project Fear, she says to him. You can hear his answer.
Is this Project Fear?
No, well, what's happened is that we've simply added up all the Labour policies in terms of their costings. They're going to renationalise energy, water, gas companies. They've got proposals to give grants for people to increase the energy efficiency of their homes. They're talking about a four-day week. Now, a four-day week, working week, sounds great, but it has to be paid for. And if you add up all the sum of their policies, you get to a huge amount of money, 1.2 trillion, which is the amount that would be required to fund the NHS for 9 years.
You say
just
these
in these policies.
You say that these are Labour policies.
Yeah.
But as far as I'm aware, Labour hasn't published its manifesto yet. Well, where are they coming from?
Well, last week, you'll remember, in the middle of last week, John McDonnell said, I think it was a £400 billion national infrastructure fund. And at that time, he said this was an unprecedented amount of
spending. I'm talking about your dossier and the £1.2 trillion.
Yeah.
And I'm asking, where are these policies from? Because Labour hasn't published a manifesto.
So
Good girl.
A large portion of them are from the 2017 manifesto, which they are committed to. And other things are policies that they've stated in the course of the last 2 years. They've spoken about the four-day week. That's something which is out there. It's public, and we've costed
that. We don't know if that's going to be in the manifesto, though. But
they have stated in the last 2 years various policies like the universal basic income. All those things are going to have to be paid for, and Labour's policies, I'm afraid, don't add up in this area.
I mean, some of the policies that you're costing as well are things that were passed at conference. And we know that not everything that was passed at conference may work its way into the manifesto. I mean, talking about private schools, for example.
It's nice to hear a UK television presenter doing her job because it's a rare thing. Sophie has done a good job there of demonstrating that the Tories' figure of over £1 trillion, their claim that Labour will spend over £1 trillion, is speculative and it's electioneering. It is spin. That's good stuff. And to her credit, she continues along the line. I'm impressed. She asks him about the Conservative Party spending. All right then, so you've made up these figures about Labour. What about yourself? What about your spending plans? What are they in total? She's with Kwasi Kwarteng, Tory business minister.
Okay, so what's your rigorous analysis then of all of the spending pledges and how much a Conservative government would cost if Boris Johnson wins the election?
Well, we've made an announcement that we're going to spend a bit more. We're going to spend...
So how much, though? Because you've got this really good round figure for Labour, £1.2 trillion. What's the figure for the Conservatives?
So the infrastructure spending we were going to do was £150 billion. That was announced.
But the total. I'm not talking about single bits of policy. I'm talking about the total spend.
That was the broad figure. And it was a much lower figure than the one that John McDonnell boasted about, which was $400 billion alone on national infrastructure.
Okay, so that's the infrastructure.
So that's a third
spending.
Of the $1.2 trillion, and that's how we've got to the $1.2 trillion.
So that's the infrastructure spending from the parties. But what's the total Conservative spend?
So what we're trying to do is do 3% of GDP on infrastructure spending. And we're going to spend more money on police, which is the right thing to do, and we're going to spend a lot more money on the NHS. But our sums are not anything as astronomical and as huge as the Labour sums.
Okay, so because what's
they
sums,
can't be
then?
They can't be costed. And we were announced $84 billion last year extra for the NHS by the end of the 2022 period, as we thought it was then. We've already announced more spending increases, and that comes on the back of actually being prudent, being sensible about public finances.
I'm just a bit confused that, you know, Conservative campaign headquarters have spent all this time working out this exact sum for Labour. They've gone through all of the spending commitments, as you say. They've got this nice big number, and yet you can't tell me what the equivalent number is for the Conservatives.
We had a budget last year which set the Parliament, so all those figures are
public. But we're interested about the next Parliament, aren't we? It's the election is happening. What are the plans
the money
for the next
that
5 years?
Spent.
This is good stuff. She's making a complete bollocks of this guy, and she won't let it go, and she continues.
We had a budget, and that's what governments do. Governments have budgets
We had a budget, and she won't let it go.
Spending policies. The reason why we've costed the opposition's manifesto is that oppositions can get away with things, or opposition policies, is that they can get away with these things. They can promise the earth without any real rigorous look at actually how much they're going to spend and where the money's going to come from. And that's what we've done. And it's absolutely right that we did so. It's absolutely right that the public know that Labour's plans are reckless and unaffordable.
You haven't got an equivalent number for the Conservatives, have you?
Yes, I like this, you see. Just keep going. You're like a dog with a bone there. Just keep asking him. He's got to answer it eventually.
We do have a number.
What is it then?
Good stuff. What is it then, you madman?
Well, as I've said, we're spending $150 billion more in infrastructure. We're going to spend a lot more money on
that's not
on
the total.
Police.
That's not the total.
I'm not going to bandy
it?
Around figures.
But that's what you've
saying.
Been doing for Labour.
Well,
I could kiss Sophie this morning. This is good, you see. For all the criticism we give people like Sophie Ridge, this is very good. I'm not going to bandy around numbers, he said. She's asked him, right, you've criticised the Labour Party for what you have said will be a $1.2 trillion spend in 5 years, even though they haven't released their manifesto yet. So what's your number? How much are you going to spend? And he has the balls to say to her, well, I'm not going to bandy around any numbers. And she says, that's what you're doing for the Labour Party. This is good.
Around figures.
But that's what you've been doing for Labour.
Well, of course, but that's there.
She's laughing in his face.
And that's our job, is to script.
Our job is to lie through our teeth. And your job, Sophie, is not to call us on it. I'm very disappointed in you, Sophie. Sky News is supposed to be a Conservative Party supporting news organisation. What the fuck are you doing, Sophie? You're embarrassing me.
To scrutinise what Labour are doing. We're saying
also, that's our job.
No,
your job is to tell us what your proposals are so they voters can come to a genuine decision.
It's absolutely right for us to say this is what the opposition is saying.
She did her job. Very good stuff by Sophie Ridge. Now, the Shadow Community Secretary, Labour MP Andrew Gwynn, was on the Andrew Marr show on the BBC. So he was asked about these claims that Labour will spend $1.2 trillion and bankrupt the bejesus out of us. This is Andrew Gwynn on the Marr show.
Well, look, this is an absolute work of fiction by the Conservatives. You can't trust a word that Johnson and his ministers say on this issue. We will have a fully costed manifesto in due course when we launch that. And, you know, the challenge is actually for the Conservatives to fully cost their own manifesto, something they didn't do in 2017. But let me make it very clear, Andrew. You know, the Tories have form at making up stories of telling mistruths. This is one of those that can be filed in fiction next to doctored images of shadow cabinet members not answering questions when actually they have answered questions.
Okay, so he was pretty emphatic. So Andrew Marr, I think, asks him, so what is the real figure then?
You must know now what the figure is. If it's not 1.2 trillion, you are promising to spend a huge amount of money in all sorts of areas. So what is the total figure?
Well, look, that's still being finalised.
You don't know yet.
Well, we don't know what the manifesto manifesto is going to be in its entirety, because we've got next Saturday our Clause 5 meeting where the whole Labour family, the shadow cabinet, the trade unions, the affiliated organisations and the National Policy Forum all come together. We finalise and hammer out that manifesto. But our manifesto, Andrew, I give you this pledge, will be fully costed. There will be open transparency from the Labour Party. Let's see that from the Tories.
Let's see that from Tories. I want to see Tory plans. We'll come back to Andrew Gwynne a little bit later on, because the notion of free movement of people came up in the conversation, and it was a very interesting exchange, so it was. This is Sunday View with me, Richie Allen. Good morning to you, live right now on Fab Radio 2 in Manchester. We're on richieallen.co.uk as well. Trigger warning, of course, and the TuneIn Radio app. I'll be back with you 60 seconds.
Renowned healer Mark Byerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Byerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbyerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
And Mark Byerski returns to the Richie Allen Show tomorrow. Always fascinating, always interesting guy. Love Mark. He's back on the program this week. Is Mark. Now, hi to Tom M. Hi to Tom, who says the Tories accusing Labour of financial irresponsibility is a classic case of the pot calling the kettle black. We're nearly $2 trillion in debt, says Tom, and the deficit is or was £25 billion in 2019. I've retweeted his tweet even there. Hi to Cliff Moore as well. Good morning, Cliff. Good morning to Paul, to Liz, to Gail. Good morning to Ricky. Good morning to Belle Walsh. How you doing, Belle? Good morning to everybody listening and tweeting. You know how to read the tweets that come my way, where it says search Twitter, Richie Allen Show, all one word, press enter, and you'll see what is being tweeted to me. It's coming up for 17 and a half minutes past 11. It is a glorious morning in Salford in Greater Manchester. It's gorgeous out there. I bet you it's cold, though. I've not been out this morning. The future Mrs. Allen, indoors, has been on dog walking duty, so I've not set foot outside door. Not yet, anyway. I'll be out at some stage. I'll pop my head out. So I will. The couple of newspapers we haven't done. The Sunday Express headline, Farage gives Tories final ultimatum. The pact again. This is Brexit Party leader Nigel Farage given an ultimatum, allegedly, over a Brexit pact. They want, basically, the Brexit Party wants to do a deal with the Conservative Party where the Brexit Party would not put MPs up against the more hardline Conservative Party Brexiteers. Basically, so that they can get Brexit done, because it would have a more Brexity Parliament after the election on December 12th. But the Conservative Party and Boris Johnson has said many times, in fact, in the last couple of weeks, they do not want to do any deal with the Brexit Party or anybody else for that matter. The Daily Star Sunday headline is ridiculous. Ant and Dec snubbed me on cruelty. This is the environmentalist television presenter Chris Packham. He wanted the television show I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, basically to stop eating live animals during its tapings. Yeah, all right. Here's an interesting story, and it's in the Daily Mail. Tories call for urgent investigation into £3 million that George Soros funneled into anti-Brexit campaign aimed at bringing down Boris Johnson. It's a very interesting story, and listeners to the Richie Allen radio show, your ears should be pricking up. We've talked a lot about George Soros and open society, of course, and open democracy, and his interference in the politics of countries all over the world. It's funny, when you talk about Soros, Zionist, ultra-Zionist people, Israeli hardline supporters, they love to claim that any discussion about George Soros is anti-Semitic. Well, spitting on the footpath these days is anti-Semitic. Everything is anti-Semitic, apparently, in 2019. But yeah, Soros and who he is and where he came from is a very interesting study indeed. But yeah, good stuff in the mail. They're talking about the money that he spent on anti-Brexit campaigns. Very fond of the European Union is George Soros, and the dissolution of national sovereignty all around the world, really, and the destruction of borders all around the world, really. Loves a bit of that, does George. So it's a good stuff. They talk, the article discusses him hedging at the pound, nearly breaking the Bank of England, of course, and all of that's good. It's in the Daily Mail, dailymail.co.uk, if you want to read it. And of course, it's all the more interesting because the newspapers this weekend have been full of stories about Russian interfering in elections. You know, there's an investigation that has concluded, and there is a report that has concluded, and there is a report that is ready to be published, but the government won't publish it. It's a report into Russian interference in UK elections, including, of course, the referendum in 2016. And there's all sorts of speculation that the reason the government won't publish it is because it will embarrass the government, because a number of Russian billionaires in recent years have made significant donations to the Conservative Party. That's how I'm reading it anyway, and I'm not always right. But it's very interesting, all this talk about the Russians, and you've got people like Soros and others spending pretty large sums of money to divert campaigns, to divert public attention from one place to another, and to influence the outcome of referenda and elections. George Soros. Go to dailymail.co.uk and read it. It's very, very good. Soros, of course, bet against the pound back in 1992, and he did that elsewhere as well. I've discussed Soros many times. I did a whole show on him one morning about who he is and what he's done and where he came from. Good stuff in the Mail on Sunday today. Speaking of interference, dear listener, 22 minutes past 11 it is, General Sir Nick Carter is the Chief of the Defence Staff. And because it's Remembrance Sunday today, he's been all over the telly. And he's been all over the telly to tell us that basically we have to remember and honour the war dead and war veterans. Now, I personally couldn't give a toss, to be honest. Personally, nearly every war they're referencing this morning are wars of aggression, imperialist wars, where working class stiffs like me and you were conned into fighting for Queen and country. I know better, you see. This working class Joe isn't fooled by this annual festival of monumental bollocks and virtue signalling. Let's remember the millions murdered in Iraq, in Vietnam, Afghanistan, in Bosnia, in India, in Libya, in Syria. I could be here all day. Let's remember them. And while you're at it, take that little red poppy and insert it sideways up your big hairy arse, right? Right. That's what I say. You mightn't like that very much, but I don't care. I'll say what I want, and I want to say what I think. I say what I like, and I like what I bloody well say. Stick it up your jacksie. So Marr wanted to talk about Russia with General Sir Nick Carter. This made me laugh. Andrew Marr and General Sir Nick Carter. Marr wanted to dig down into those dastardly Russians. Dastardly.
We have to assume that now, in this general election campaign, Russian bots and Russian planners are sitting in St. Petersburg or whatever, trying to disrupt the democracy, trying to set people against people, trying to divide and demoralise, as they have done in previous campaigns. Is there anything we can really do about that?
Well, I think a huge amount it is about how one educates one's public, so that they understand that you need to look a bit deeper into issues and simply believe what you read in 140 characters. And that's why these programmes are important, the one like this one you run, Andrew.
But do you think we are under attack by Russia every day through cyber?
I mean, you've been with me now for years, so you understand this better than anybody because I've explained it to you for years. Andrew Marr is not asking Nick Carter questions here. He is planting suggestions in the minds of the 1.5 million people watching. I think they average about 1.5 million viewers for Andrew Marr. Maybe it's a little bit more sometimes. This is incredible. He's actually given Sir Nick Carter the script. He's telling him what he wants to hear from him. Listen to it carefully. It's really revealing.
That's why I import these programmes.
It's important, your programme, Andrew.
The one like this one you run, Andrew.
And listen to Marr.
Andrew.
But do you think we are under attack by Russia every day through cyber disinformation?
It's brilliant.
I'm not sure there's any absolute clear evidence of all of that.
But well done, Nick.
We've certainly seen it in other elections throughout the world and in other diplomatic conditions as well.
There's a big report by MPs about Russian involvement in the British state and in British political parties. Number 10 are sitting on it. Are you disappointed that we're not being able to read that?
Well, again, I mean, it's a political question as to when that is published, of course, and you wouldn't expect me to comment on that. And it has to go through a process. But I think, you know, enough has happened in the world over the last 5 years with Russia today and disinformation and all the rest of it for people, understandably, to be concerned about how that might have impacted upon all sorts of democratic processes.
What did he say next, Marr?
A lot of people watching at home will be listening to you and they'll think, here's a man who knows what's going on with Russia.
Russia. Russia, Russia, Russia.
What can you tell us that we don't know already?
He's just answered the question. There's no really clear evidence, he said, of any interference. There's no clear evidence of Russian interference here. But Marr has to keep it going. And this is what the media does. It doesn't question. It doesn't hold to account. The media is part of a narrative. The media is part of a programming agenda to put it into people's minds that Russia, and I think they might come to China in a minute, these are very bad countries, very, very, very bad. And they're always interfering, they're always doing things, and we have to be very careful, and we might have to take some steps against Russia and China. This is what Marr is doing. This isn't a journalist asking questions of a military expert. Marr is selling an agenda. He's selling an idea to the public.
Well, that's why I write articles like the one we wrote in The Telegraph today. I mean, I think, you know, there's so much news these days and bandwidth is limited for obvious reasons. And what I talk about isn't necessarily on the front page. So I think it's important that we try and educate people that there is still a threat. And that's why remembrance matters, coming back to it, because, of course, remembrance is also about education. And remembrance gives us an opportunity as professionals to explain that if you don't prepare for the war you might have to fight, there's a risk you'll lose it when it happens or indeed prevent it from occurring.
Is it just Russia that we're worried about these days, or are you concerned about China?
Because, oh, I'll get China in there.
Because online and in all sorts of unconventional ways, lots of countries can behave in all sorts of unusual ways. I mean, whether it's, I mean, we've seen assassinations, we've seen people being killed in this country, we've seen really quite aggressive online attacks of one kind or another on our sense of ourselves.
Yeah, I'm not even going to play the rest of that, so you don't need to hear the answer from General Sir Nick Carter. It's another glib answer. Imagine the balls of a BBC presenter asking a military expert about other countries interfering or attempting to interfere in UK politics. Imagine the balls of it. Only in the last 20 years do I have to talk about Libya. Do I have to talk about Syria? Do I have to talk? No, I don't. I don't, because you know. Because you're not stupid. You don't need me to tell you that. This is Sunday View on Sunday, November 10th, 2019. And my name is Richie Allen. Good morning to you. What a morning it is here in Greater Manchester. Looks lovely anyway, looking out the studio window. Like I said, I bet it's cold outside. Baby, I bet you it's cold outside. This is the Beach Boys. I nearly said the Bee Gees. This is the Beach Boys and California Girls. Back in 2 minutes. Good morning to David. David tweets, how are they going to signal virtue when all the veterans are gone? It makes me sick seeing teenagers all uniformed up, convinced spilling blood for the cabal is a noble quest, says David. And that's David Stanford. David Kona. David, how you doing, by the way? Here's a question for your local would-be MPs, says David. Can you tell me how I'm going to heat my house post-2030? Because most councils have agreed that there is a climate emergency and they've said that they and you will be carbon neutral by 2030. Also carbon zero by 2050. It's a very good point, David. Very good point. And when this Extinction Rebellion thing began in earnest some months ago, there were a lot of environmentalists on television going unchallenged, saying things like, we're going to have to cap the temperature in people's houses. Their thermostats are going to have to be capped at 19 degrees or something like that in the winter. That, of course, would be unbearable for, well, for millions of people over 60 or over 70, wouldn't it? All of these lunatic proposals based on a monumental pack of lies. Yes, these are questions. But I tell you, from what I understand, the days even of incumbent MPs or would-be MPs turning up on your doorstep, those days are gone. They don't do that anymore. They don't turn up anymore on people's doorsteps with their rosettes and their helpers looking to speak to you to talk about you know, what their party will do in government. They just don't do it. They don't do it, you know. Hi to John, who says, I can't hear California Girls without seeing Roger Moore's Bond snowboarding away from Soviet soldiers in A View to a Kill. You know, I love A View to a Kill because I think Christopher Walken and Grace Jones are among the best James Bond baddies of all time. But the problem with A View to a Kill is Roger Moore was too old for that role by then, wasn't he? I think the previous film was Octopussy, I think, was it? And then A View to a Kill, he was too old to play Bond. And there are a lot of close-ups in that film, and you can see just... I mean, he was in his mid-50s, wasn't he? When he made A View to a Kill. Great film, though. Great fun, that one. Hi to Sean Hinchcliffe. How you doing, Sean? Boris Johnson says major flooding in North is not a national emergency. That's an independent headline from yesterday. And Sean thinks, well, Boris Johnson is an asshole. I don't think that particular statement by Boris Johnson, Sean, was the straw that broke the camel's back. I think you've known for a long time. Here's an interesting story in the Mail on Sunday. I don't know what to make of this. The headline is, owners of aggressive dogs will be forced to take their pets for compulsory training under new government plans. What? What? Yeah, if you've got an aggressive dog and you're not in control of it, you might soon be forced to go for compulsory training under new plans. Jesus, it's kind of scary, this. So according to the Mail, this is being considered by the government. The scheme would operate in a similar way to the speed awareness courses. So if you speed for the very first time, they do, rather than give you points on your license, they might offer you a speed awareness course, which you've got to pay for. And I think the payment is equivalent to the fine that you would have got. But you'll gladly grab it with both hands. And you will go to that speed awareness course because you will then avoid having 3 points put on your licence, right? Right. So the proposed shake-up of dog control laws comes after a recent parliamentary inquiry. And this the parliamentary inquiry came about because the British Veterinary Association, the RSPCA, the Dogs Trust, and the Kennel Club came together to say that there is a problem in society with aggressive dogs. Now, I'm asking you, is there? Because I'm a dog owner. And, well, you know, I've never seen myself as a dog owner. I say dog owner because that's the phrase that's in the lexicon, right? That's the phrase. We say dog owner. But I don't see myself as owning Jazz. Jazz is a friend. Jazz is like a sister that walks on four legs. She's just our pal, basically, right? We don't own her. But, of course, according to the law, we do. You know, we are responsible for her behaviour. I don't see very much aggressive behaviour when I'm out and about. I meet dog owners in Salford whose dogs are under control. Do you see it? Is this important? Do we need to look at this? Because it's a little bit scary, isn't it? The government getting involved and demanding that people go to compulsory training courses and... Yeah, I don't know. I'd be interested in getting your thoughts on it. Here's a very interesting story in the Sunday Times today. I don't think we've ever gotten through a Sunday View programme without having a little bit of trans news. There's always trans news. I bet you were waiting for it too. I wonder, is there any trans stuff in the news? Well, there is. The Sunday Times runs this story. The headline is, Transgender Campaigner suspended by Liberal Democrats. What? What? A transgender campaigner has been suspended by the Lib Dems. The party began an investigation into Amy Challenor, 22. Amy is 22. A transgender woman this summer. The inquiries are understood to include child sex fantasies that were posted on Amy's fiancé's Twitter account. What? Surely somebody's not tweeting about having sex with children. Openly. But apparently, yes. Yes, yes. So Amy has a fiancé, and he or them or they or it or whatever the fuck has been tweeting. Amy's fiancé is Nathaniel Knight and tweeted, "I fantasize about children having sex, sometimes with adults, sometimes with other children, sometimes kidnapped and forced into bad situations." Jesus Christ. Challenor, the trans woman, announced her engagement to Mr. Knight, who lives in America, back in January. Now, the Twitter posts clarified that the fantasies were not about real children. The tweets went on to say, "It's a fantasy, like a child who pretends to be a dragon while their friend is a dragon-slaying knight, or a robber while their friends pretend to be police. It's make-believe and imaginary. I fantasize about things I don't want to do in real life." Yes, Nathaniel, but if you're fantasizing about children being kidnapped and forced into having sex with adults, you are a miserable, sick fucking bastard. And you have no business being anywhere near children. What interests me is, Amy Challenor, who's engaged, the trans woman who's engaged to this fuckwit Nathaniel Knight, Amy hasn't amplified these tweets or given any indication that she, let's just say she for the crack, endorses them. Very interesting. Now, what Amy has done, and this has made me laugh, is taken the only course that you possibly can take, and everybody takes it these days, is you claim that the Twitter account of your fiancé was hacked. Now, this is monumental bollocks. Nathaniel Knight is a nobody. Why anybody would want to hack his Twitter account to put posts on there saying that you fantasize about children being raped is anybody's guess. So I'm not buying the account was hacked excuse. Not buying it. Not having it at all, right? Right, right. But that's what Amy is saying anyway. So, yeah. But the problem Amy has, according to the Times, is... oh, by the way, Amy said, "Both my partner and I condemn in the strongest ways possible the messages in those comments. We were shocked and sickened by them. But your partner tweeted them, and his defence and your defence is the stock standard, bog standard defence, which is, oh, it was hacked." I'm not buying it. So according to the Times, Amy, the trans woman, was involved in a scandal in her previous party, the Greens. She gets about Amy Challenor. She's been in the Greens. She's now in the Lib Dems, but not anymore. When her father acted as her election agent despite awaiting trial on child sex abuse charges. Yeah. Not good, is it? Not good. Bit of Lib Dem news on these issues this morning, because the Liberal Democrats, according to the Times, have also told a gender non-conforming woman who doesn't accept that humans can change sex to join another party. So the Lib Dems have kicked out a woman, a real woman with a vagina, because that woman doesn't believe that human beings can change sex. So they've kicked her out. And they've kicked her out because the woman posted about this on Mumsnet. This is a woman with a vagina who doesn't believe that a man with a penis can ever be a woman. So we can't have that. So she was booted out of the Lib Dems. She got a message from the diversity team. Lovely. The diversity team. We are a trans-inclusive party, and we've made it clear that we are fully behind trans communities. This fucking bullshit communities. There are no communities. Where are they? Where are these places? I don't see them on any map. What are they? Transville? How do you get to Transville? Well, you take Junction 5 just off the M6, Richie, and you'll see a big load of fucking trannies running around in a field. Is that the trans community? Over there, is it? How you doing? A bunch of women who don't look like women and a bunch of men who don't look like men. Is that the trans community? Jesus wept. Imagine kicking people out. You can't be part of our movement because you don't believe a guy with a cock is a woman. Well, I don't, actually. I should have given a trigger warning before I said cock, but there you are, I've said cock again. I've said it twice now, or thrice. Madness, this is a mad world we live in. Mad world. 18 minutes to the top of the hour. You can't be in our party. Why? Because you're not inclusive enough. I just don't believe that you can change sex. Get out! And take your bigotry with you. Here's an interesting story in The Observer. Climate change deniers' new battlefront attacked. Climate change deniers. Climate change deniers. I won't read you the story. Read it yourself in The Observer. But the term denier has, it's been used increasingly more often in television debates and also in newspaper articles. Being a climate change denier will not too far in the future, I don't think, it'll be as bad as being called a Holocaust denier. Yes, there are people who go about in life and they believe that the Holocaust was a fantasy, that it never happened. They're idiots, in my opinion, but they're out there and good luck to them. They should be allowed to think whatever they want and they shouldn't be deplatformed or destroyed or made redundant for their opinions. Let them have their opinions. But pretty soon, in my opinion, climate change denier is going to be just as bad. Because you're going to be perceived as, you're going to be a dangerous person in society. Because we really have to stop eating all meat, you know. We really do have to live in the freezing cold in the winter, you know. You do have to have smart fridges and freezers so that we can watch what it is you're doing, don't you know? And if your carbon footprint goes above plus or minus 5 or plus or minus 4, whatever they'll set it at, well, because of the new social crediting system, you can't use public transport or you can't go to the cinema or you can't go to watch a concert. This is not a joke now. This is what's coming down the line. Climate change deniers. So the utterly mad as a box of frogs, Caroline Lucas of the Green Party. Caroline was on the Andrew Marr this morning, the Andrew Marr show this morning. And Andrew said, Caroline, love, when was the last time you flew?
I flew, my son lives in the United States, and so I do fly. Not often, but occasionally I do. But
I'm not trying to get at you. I'm just saying it's very, very hard. Everyone has got these choices to make.
Of course it is. And we all try to make the changes that we can. But you know what? I think sometimes a focus on individual behaviour, important though that is, lets the big fossil fuel companies off the hook. It lets those in power off the hook. Because what we need here is systems change. It is incredibly easy to pit one person's behaviour against another person's behaviour and say, you're not good enough. We're all trying to do our best in a deeply imperfect system. And so what we need to be doing, I think, is focusing on changing that system. Why, for example, is it so much more expensive to take the train from the UK to other parts of Europe than it is to fly? There's no
because you gave the trains to dickheads like Richard Branson. That's why people like you, politicians like you, sold the family jewels, sold the transport system to fucking idiots like Richard Branson. That's why, love.
Fly. There's no reason for that. It's because we've chosen not to tax aviation fuel and VAT on aviation. And instead, we do when it comes to railways. So let's change those price signals to make it easier for people to do the right thing, rather than sitting in judgment on each other,
I'm honestly not sitting in judgment on you.
No, not you on me, but
all.
I'm just saying generally. Sometimes I think the Green Movement can sometimes sound as if we're doing that. And I think that's very off-putting and we shouldn't.
A bit too prim and finger-wagging occasionally.
Exactly.
But lots and lots of people are changing their lifestyles. Certainly, eating is a very big part of this, vegetarianism and veganism. And again, what are the signals that a government could send to change people's lifestyles further? Do you think we need to see an end to at least factory farming or some of the mass agriculture that we've got in this country?
Certainly, we need to see an end to the deeply cruel factory farming, and I think we need to see a real shift away from industrialised agriculture to much more eco-friendly agriculture. Now, that's not going to happen on its own. It's going to happen if the government puts its money where its mouth is and makes sure that we actually fund that transition. Our farmers are struggling right now to make ends meet, and I can quite understand that they don't simply want more goalposts to change. But if the government can set out clear targets about how, over the period to come, we are going to be eating less meat, for example, there will be more plant-based diets, there will be less intensive farming, and therefore fund that transition to make it easier for farmers to do that, then I think we can get to where we need to be.
There will be less intensive farming. There will be a big change in our diets. These people have got some balls, don't they? Eh? Who the fuck are these people? Who do they think they are? To tell people on national television that you're going to do this and you're going to do that because we told you so. No, love, we're not. We're not. And I've spoken about violence before. I don't want to get into violence. I'm completely opposed to it, but I believe that ultimately it'll come to violence, I believe. These people will drive people to violence, eventually. Caroline Lucas, yeah. A lot of stuff in the papers today about climate change. I suppose that's the way of it. Also a lot of stuff in the papers today about anti-Semitism. A lot of news stories about anti-Semitism, because a number of Labour Party officials and would-be members of Parliament have come under fire in the last few days for things they said recently or years ago. Sometimes innocuous things, sometimes maybe not so innocuous. But let's have a listen to this. The Shadow Defence Secretary, Nia Griffith, Labour MP Nia Griffith, was on Sophie Ridge this morning, and the whole spectre of anti-Semitism came up again. Have a listen to this.
Now, so far, we've seen around six Labour candidates who either quit or been forced to stand down because of allegations around anti-Semitism, whether it's comments that they've made in the past. Just to give a couple of examples, Gideon Bull, candidate in Clacton, for calling a Jewish councillor Shylock. Kate Ramsden, a candidate in Aberdeenshire, comparing Israel to an abusive adult. I mean, it's just the first week of the campaign.
Comparing Israel to an abusive adult. Yeah. A person's career could be destroyed because they said Israel is like an abusive adult. Yeah. Okay.
What's going on? Why can't you shake these kind of allegations?
Well, the reason, I'd love to have been able to transpose or to basically inhabit the body of Nia Griffith just for 30 seconds. Just to say what she should say. We're listening to this shit, Sophie, I would have said, for about 2 years, because my leader has the spine of a jellyfish. Because he hasn't got the cojones to look down a camera and say that this is a load of monumental bollocks. There is no such thing as anti-Semitism. First of all, it's a misnomer. Second of all, Jews are under no threat in the UK. There is no widespread hatred or antipathy towards Jews. It is monumental bollocks, Sophie. Next question, please. But of course, she starts to backpedal and starts to answer these ridiculous allegations.
Well, we absolutely must have the highest standards in public life, and we must absolutely stamp out all forms of anti-Semitism and other forms of racial prejudice and LGBT prejudice.
Blah, blah, blah.
And so where we do, unfortunately, discover such things, it's absolutely right and proper that we have a proper investigation and that appropriate action is taken. And that's why we are taking the action that we are taking.
I mean, the problem is, it feels like these stories are starting to cut through. I mean, we were hearing from Grimsby, some of the people in Grimsby earlier, and I just still remember one girl who was I was talking to, Jeremy Corbyn fan, Labour supporter. She likes what you're doing on austerity. Mm. She doesn't like Boris Johnson. She really wants to vote for you. And yet she still said this to me when I spoke to her in Grimsby, covered market, about Jeremy Corbyn. He's been accused of saying things that are racist and, you know, anti-Semitic and stuff. But I think some of the things he's doing are really good. He's trying to support young people more. I mean, this is someone who is on your side, and yet the messages about anti-Semitism are still filtering through. Mm. This must be deeply frustrating.
Well, as you know, Jeremy absolutely is not anti-Semitic and he is not racist, and he would immediately condemn those sorts of comments that you've quoted earlier. But the point is, we do need to make sure that we stamp this out in the party. We do need to make sure that candidates are properly investigated.
So why hasn't it happened then?
Well, the point is that we are making sure that we do investigate. Where things come to light, we are making sure that we do investigate and that we do take action.
Yeah, a lot of stories. Again, Friday, Saturday, yesterday, an interview with Luciana Berger, the Jewish MP who used to be in the Labour Party and left because anti-Semitism is terrible. Berger with the Lib Dems now, it's everywhere today again. The Jews are terrified. They're not. I'm not going to say what I've said every day last week and every day the week before. The Jews, a minority group in the UK, but an identity group, of course, not a race, are doing very well for themselves. And the Jews I know are quite happy, quite comfortable, feel very safe and prosperous in the UK, and they don't know what all the fuss is about. And those are real Jews, by the way. But I suppose the Zionist Jews, which is a different class of Jew entirely, would say that they're the wrong Jews, Richie. You're talking to the wrong Jews. You need to talk to us. Good morning to Liz. Oh, by the way, Liz says, how you doing, Liz? If we're heading into a mini ice age, Richie, then a plant-based diet will threaten us more than a meat-based diet. I am against the cruel animal farming practices, but we do need a balance, says Liz. Thanks for that comment, Liz. Yes, we are believed to be heading towards a grand solar minimum, a cooling period. And I've had a number of people on the programme speaking about this, including a UK academic, Valerie, go on, Rich, you'll remember, Richie. Valerie Zharkova, is that her name? Very interesting lady, Zharkova, could be, or that could be the last winner of Wimbledon. It could be as well. I think it's Zharkova, yeah. Very smart woman, mathematician, who explained very well, in lay terms, for a big idiot like me, how the grand solar minimum is an inevitability. It's an inevitability. It's coming, yeah. Right, that's nearly it. I was going to go back to Andrew Gwynn, the Labour MP, because he was on the Mar show this morning. We heard him earlier, but Mar stumped him on a question about the ending of free movement of people. And Andrew Marr made a bit of an idiot of him, but I've not really got time to get into it, so I'm not going to get into it. Basically, it's just a politician getting hoisted on his own petard. Marr was able to introduce to Andrew Gwynn statements that Gwynn made about how free movement of people was devastating for working class communities, but now Andrew Gwynn is all for the continuation of free movement of people, as is his leader Jeremy Corbyn. They're a bunch of hypocritical bastards, all of them. This is why we come back to the original question at the beginning of the programme. Richie, will you go out and vote in 5 weeks' time? No! I haven't voted since 2002. This is the only independent radio show in the world where the host regularly explains why it is futile to vote for any of these people. In this country, anyway, everything else that claims to be independent is actually mainstream light. You know who I'm talking about. The other faux alternative channels. I say faux alternative because they endorse Jeremy Corbyn. It's ridiculous. You know, we'll never have any, you know, systematic change until people realise that there isn't a snowball's chance in hell of electing a government that will work for and on behalf of the people. They don't. First thing they do after the election is swear an oath of allegiance to the Queen of England and all her heirs. If they don't do that, they are not allowed to enter the House of Commons, and they are not allowed to take part in House of Commons business. Not even left in. I swear true and... What's the fucking thing? I'll bring it up for you. Excuse me. Where is it? So if I get elected as MP then, right? which is unlikely, of course. I, Richie Allen, it would be Richard Gerald Allen. My middle name is Gerald, after my grandfather. Richard Gerald Allen, do swear that I will be faithful and bear true allegiance to Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth, her heirs and successors, according to law. Yeah. According to the law. So help me God. That's where you are. So no, I won't be voting. Right, that's it for today. Thanks for listening as usual. I really appreciate it. I'll be back with you tomorrow morning at 9:30 for the morning paper review on YouTube. And then I'll be back at 5 o'clock with the Richie Allen Radio Show. They're not to be confused. Mark Bajerski is my guest tomorrow. I'm going to close out the programme with a little dedication to guitar hero Ryan, who serenaded us last night with a bit of John Denver, a bit of Bruce Springsteen and a bit of Kenny Rogers. And I mentioned to young Ryan, budding guitar hero, that he should be checking out my favourite artist of all time, Bob Seger. Check out a bit of Bob Seger, Ryan. Thanks for listening to Sunday View. Speak to you tomorrow. Until then, have a fantastic Sunday. Look after yourselves and one another. This is one of the greatest songs of all time. Bye now.